Welcome. This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And this is James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com, and we both welcome you back to another episode of The New World next week. Of course, you can find everything high-quality, low-quality video and everything to spread this information on NewWorldNextWeek.com. James, we'll begin with what is pretty much the biggest story here in the States right now as I come to you. June 20th, 2012, summer solstice. House panel votes to cite Eric Holder for contempt of Congress. A House Oversight Committee voted Wednesday to hold Attorney General Eric Holder in contempt, marking an escalation of the long-running dispute between Republicans and the Justice Department over internal administration documents related to Operation Fast and Furious. The 23-17 vote to hold Holder in contempt of Congress came as President Obama Wednesday morning invoked executive privilege for the first time in his term of certain documents related to the controversial botched gun trafficking sting. A little background, two weapons traced to the gun operation, which allowed hundreds of firearms from the United States into Mexico, were recovered at the scene of the 2010 murder of border agent Brian Terry. The agent's death brought an end to the gun trafficking operation. The investigation into the operation was spurred after Senator Charles Grassley, Republican of Iowa, inquired into whistleblower allegations that the government had allowed the transfer of illegally purchased weapons into Mexico. Daryl Issa wants to see documents that would shed light on internal discussions since February 2011 when the Justice Department sent a letter to Congress denying allegations of gun walking. That letter was later withdrawn by the Justice Department. The White House pointed out that this is the first time Obama has asserted executive privilege during his presidency. President George W. Bush claimed the privilege 6 times and President Clinton 14 times. The Republican National Committee noted that in 2007, Obama twice in interviews with CNN was critical of the Bush administration's use of executive privilege. James, we do have some of the related updates. And again, about 40 minutes ago, top story on Google News, Obama claims executive privilege. Vote to sanction Holder escalates gun probe fight from the Wall Street Journal. James.
Right. Well, I think for anyone who's been paying attention over the past decade or two, the prospect of Eric Holder in an orange jumpsuit will be a pleasant one, especially people who know, even going back to the Clinton administration and his involvement in the Kenneth Trenodew cover-up the illegality is rampant. So the prospect of that is something to look forward to, but again, don't hold your breath. It's an interesting story, but it's not one that I've been following in close detail. So what can you tell me about the American context and whether you think that this is something that's likely to take place, or is this just more sort of political drama and wrangling in an election cycle?
I worry that it is just that, as the fake political paradigm. And it's that battle as we lead up to our presidential selections. But for me, it's one of those stories that when it does get so large, I see it as a positive thing because it can shed light on so many of these things. So we made the reference to Clinton using executive privilege 14 times. We will include flashback links so you can learn about Clinton back in Mena, Arkansas, and the drug running there. And of course, this Fast and Furious and the gun running and all this, you can say it started under the previous Bush administration, but you look back, it's Bush and Clinton and Bush, and it's pretty much drugs. And we know the old boys, drug running, Wall Street, and that's how they roll.
Exactly right. Well, one of the interesting aspects of this story is that, as Issa and others are pointing out, it's not even clear that the White House can use executive privilege in this instance, because this is internal DOJ correspondence and memos and things that had nothing to do with the president. So it's unclear how the president can claim any kind of executive privilege here. So there are some interesting little wranglings to happen here. But again, I'm not exactly holding my breath that this is going to bring down the DOJ.
So we'll go from one botched alphabet agency to another. We'll go from the DOJ to the NRO. The National Reconnaissance Office today launched U.S. spy satellite on a secret mission. This coming from space.com and posted to my own cyberspacewar.com. A new U.S. spy satellite launched into orbit Wednesday, today, again, June 20th, 2012, kicking off a clandestine national security mission for the National Reconnaissance Office. The NROL 38 reconnaissance spacecraft lifted off this morning from Cape Canaveral in Florida atop an Atlas V rocket. It marked a milestone flight for the rocket company, a partnership between Lockheed Martin and Boeing. Congratulations to the NRO and all the mission quotes from the guys running this. The Chantilly, Virginia-based NRO manages the design, construction, and operation of the United States Network of Intelligence Gathering Spy Satellites. Remember that intelligence gathering. ULA officials broadcast the initial liftoff this morning of the Atlas V rocket and spy satellite live via satellite and webcast, but cut off the video stream several minutes after the launch due to the classified nature of the mission. The NROL 38 mission will contribute toward the military's national defense program, though the details of how it will be kept under wraps. Few specifics of the satellite's design and purpose are publicly available, and the mission went into a media blackout shortly after liftoff. The reminder, the launch comes just days after the end of another secret government mission, the second flight of the Air Force's classified X-37B space plane. James, in the links I include on this post on Cyberspace War, to watch a video, you can kind of hear the sort of, you know, mission control voiceover, and it just I forget the line, but just something about, you know, continuing our vigilance from space for 50 years, and it just sounds like something out of Terminator and Skynet.
Unfortunately, so many stories these days do sound like something out of Skynet, but I like these types of stories because they put things into perspective for a lot of people out there who, myself included, from time to time, we start to forget just how much it is that we have no clue about. We have no idea because we're simply not allowed to know what the government is doing behind our backs. So every now and then there's a story like this that, yes, you can know the existence of some sort of satellite that we're sending up, but you can't know anything about it, what it's doing, any of the design specs, and basically it's just a big mystery. And so so that can at least allow us to contemplate all of the technologies and things that are going on behind the scenes that we have zero clue about. And it helps to put that into perspective because we like to think that we have a grasp on what's happening on the governmental level. But of course, there's just so much happening under the cloak of national security that we're not allowed to know that it makes a calculation of any sort really quite impossible. And of course, we've seen in the course of our lifetime the unveiling of things like the SR-71 or whatever, which back in its day was super secret technology. Well, just think about what they have now that we're not allowed to know about. So it does throw off any kind of serious calculation that we could be making, because that's exactly what the national security state is designed to do. It's designed to hide and cover up this type of technology. But I did notice the headlines about the X-37B and its return after, I think, something like 400 and some odd days. But still, as far as I know, we don't really know anything about what that mission was about either, do we?
No, and that's the thing. I think it basically comes down to, we're only talking about this with you because there's no way for us to really hide a massive rocket launch or our retrieval and landing. So we'll tell you that, hey, we launched one, and hey, one came back, but that's pretty much the long and short of it. James, wasn't the National Reconnaissance Office, I forget how close to 9/11, but weren't they running this?
They were the ones that were running one of the drills on the day itself. They evacuated their offices on the day of 9/11 because of an imagined scenario of the hijacked jet. That was the hijacked jet flying into a building that was being drilled on 9/11.
That is amazing coincidence, isn't it?
And the NRO would have been one of the agencies that would have been able to help in the tracking of planes, even if they didn't have their transponders turned on, because as we all know, if you turn your transponder off, no one will ever find you.
We'll definitely include the background information for that, James. Our third and final story, we go from outer space and come back down to inner space. From the New York Times, a pretty massive story in this past Sunday's business section. You for sale, mapping and sharing the consumer genome, Axiom. That's A-C-X-I-O-M, Axiom, the quiet giant of consumer database marketing. And you can tell the writer loved kind of hamming it up for this. It knows who you are. It knows where you live. It knows what you do. It peers deeper into American life than the FBI and the IRS or those prying digital eyes at Facebook and Google. If you're an American adult, the odds are that it knows things like your age, race, sex, weight, height, marital status, education level, politics, buying habits, household, health worries, vacation dreams, and on and on. Right now, in Conway, Arkansas, north of Little Rock, more than 23,000 computer servers are collecting, collating, and analyzing consumer data for a company that, unlike Silicon Valley's marquee names, rarely makes headlines. It's called the Axiom Corporation, and it's the quiet giant of a multi-billion dollar industry known as database marketing. Few consumers have ever heard of Axiom, but analysts say it has amassed the world's largest commercial database on consumers and that it wants to know much, much more. Its servers process more than 50 trillion data transactions a year. Company executives have said its database contains information about 500 million active consumers worldwide, with about 1,500 data points per person. That includes a majority of adults in the United States. Such large-scale data mining and analytics based on information available in public records, consumer surveys, and the like are perfectly legal. Axiom's customers have included big banks like Wells Fargo and HSBC, investment services like E-Trade, automakers like Toyota and Ford, department stores like Macy's, just about any major company looking for insight into its customers. However, in interviews, security experts and consumer advocates paint a portrait of a company with practices that privilege corporate clients' interests over those of consumers, and will include flashback links, and they have been hacked in the past, James.
Surprise, surprise. Certainly just part of the unveiling of the information age and its attendant risks. And of course, the solution that will be proposed is, well, what we need is more government regulation over companies like this. Ignoring the fact that the main databases are actually the ones that the government would have on us, that we've gotten glimpses of over the years. The Total Information Awareness Office, which was unveiled and put out in the big PR rollout, and then they took it back because it was a bit too much for the public to handle. But as sources have confirmed, it's still going on. It just doesn't have the name and the all-seeing eye bathing the world in radiation that the old office did. But it's still going on. It's happening at the governmental level. So this is just, at least for a lot of people out there, a good glimpse as to the type of information that that the government and anyone out there can have on you just by collating the freely available information that everyone has out there. Because we give so much of our information away on a daily basis, and more and more and more of it as we get further and further into this, the cashless society, the control grid, the electronic society, all of the various aspects of the ways that our information is being collected.
Well, on that sunny note, James, will remind folks that on our upcoming episode of Food World Order, where I join you live on Republic Broadcasting, we will dive into the Rio Plus 20 conference, which, as you noted last week, I believe, has gone somewhat unnoticed.
It seems to be crashing and burning, so we'll hope that it doesn't really accomplish much. But I'll also be covering that in some interviews that are coming up on CorbettReport.com, so I hope people stay tuned for that. And I'm looking forward to talking to you tonight on Corbett Report Radio.
All right, man. Thanks so much. Take care.